Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.
Football Weekly Extra. Today, scores, World Cup draws, a loser that saw, and a Ballon d'Or. There's the weekend's big matchups: Man City with Chelsea, West Ham with Man United, Barry with David Pleat. There's Sid in Spain, your post, and the World Cup draw. England are seeded like a field of turnips, but what other news can our man in Cape Town, Owen Gibson, bring us? Find out in today's Football Weekly Extra. Yes, hello everybody, and welcome to Football Weekly Extra. On board today, we've got Barry Glendening.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. Paul Doyle joins us.
Hi, James.
Nice to have you back, Paul.
Yeah.
And nice to have you back, Sean Ingle, figure of controversy that you are.
Hello, James. Yeah. You'll upset some of the posters with your extra.
Why?
You gave it added emphasis. I'd probably say they should have gone straight to the football.
Oh, really? Oh, that's a bit bitter, isn't it, Sean?
No.
Yeah, go on. You've been getting lots of grief off the posters, on the message boards. Lots of Ingle, give up your seat. Ingle, don't always pick yourself. Ingle, clear up. All right, I wrote that one. But a lot of people posting with negative reaction. I'm saying, show Shawnee some love.
I think Sean should pay less attention to these naysayers and just give them a big metaphorical finger.
Right. Just like I do when they say, don't sing. Don't sing the collected works of Chris Rea. But in part three, a little bit of a treat coming up. Good. All right. Well, I have to say, amidst all this, as you say, naysaying, wasn't it nice of Colin to post in saying that Monday's pod was pure gold, he says. That's lovely, because a lot of people were of a differing opinion. But anyway.
Is that the best pseudonym you could come up with? Colin.
Now, Man City. Should we start with Man City? Untraditionally enough. Today. On Saturday, they host league leaders Chelsea. They've had seven straight draws, but they are, of course, buoyed by this midweek's Carling Cup victory, 3-0 over Arsenal. You've got a frown on your face, Ingle. Well, why?
Somewhat overbuoyed. After the match, which City dominated and won fairly convincingly, Mark Hughes said, "We showed we are a match for anyone," and this was after beating
anyone's youth team.
Arsenal's reserves. They did dominate and they deserve to win. But it's one thing beating Arsenal reserves and another beating Chelsea, who have a fantastic record away at Manchester City in the Premier League era. They've won 10 and drawn 1 out of 12 matches.
That doesn't mean anything, though. I hate when people preview matches by giving, in 1973 they won there, in 1987 they won there.
No, but it suggests, though, that Man City, they want to break into the big four. They want to be beating the best teams. And you know, against Chelsea, and it's the same against the likes of Arsenal, Manchester United as well, that they haven't got a good record against them.
Paul, they did beat Arsenal's reserve team yesterday. They also beat Arsenal's full team earlier on the season, and with Robin van Persie, I think, was playing there, and he's obviously been a big miss for Arsenal. What last night's match showed, when they went 1-0 in front, they did become quite nervous, and a more experienced and accomplished team than Arsenal's reserves may have quite easily got back into the game.
Now, Paul, can I mention these previous results? Chelsea's last two trips to the Northwest, which saw them beat Bolton 4-0, but lose 3-1 to Wigan, which does suggest their form's a little bit shaky.
They're not invincible. That's all that shows. I mean, they did beat Arsenal comprehensively on Sunday, but they're not invincible, as indeed Blackburn showed last night. They can be beaten. I think they will be champions.
But right.
City have a chance. City have more strength and speed up front than Arsenal currently do. And that was the big deficiency at the Emirates on Sunday for Arsenal. So City could trouble them.
Interesting. What about the situation at Arsenal, though? Second big defeat for them. Arsene Wenger,
a big defeat, though?
Isn't it?
I don't think so. It's a League Cup quarter final. Who cares?
All right, then. He seemed to care.
He
certainly seemed put out, shall we say.
Yeah, that was a weird thing. He refused to shake hands with Mark Hughes. And then,
why do you think that was?
Well, I have no idea. He wouldn't say. I don't know if there's previous bad blood between them or if it was because of some ridiculous incident during the first half where I think Hughes encroached on his technical area. But if that was the case, and I honestly don't know whether there's bad blood between them or not, that would seem really petty. He said afterwards, I don't have to shake hands with. I'm paraphrasing here, but I don't have to shake hands with anyone I don't want to, which is fair enough, but still rather rude. Well, you don't have to shake hands with somebody if you don't want to. You know, by the same token, you can walk around with no trousers on, but you know, that's also frowned upon.
He is probably the worst loser out of all the managers. People often accuse Fergie of being a bad loser, but actually he's often quite gracious in defeat. What I think will happen tomorrow is that we'll have lots of Wenger losing it stories, Arsenal in crisis stories. It's the way of the modern media.
Will they not wait till Saturday, do you think?
No, I think they'll slam in tomorrow.
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
Because I think Saturday will be World Cup draw. The way of the modern media is that there's always a big club in crisis, you know. Mm. It was United after Burnley, it was Chelsea after Wigan, it's been Liverpool for the last couple of months. It will be Arsenal inevitably, tomorrow. But if they beat Stoke convincingly the weekend, then, you know, we'll move on to someone else.
All right. Well, let's move on to someone else. Chelsea, we talked about them and the fact that they got... we didn't mention the fact that they lost to Blackburn on penalties midweek in the Carling Cup. Andy in Brum says, any chance of Blackburn getting the focus here instead of Chelsea? Richie Dunn wanted to talk about Paul Robinson, who he suggests is by far the best performer this season and possibly should be back into the England keeper mix.
I haven't seen enough of Blackburn playing to say whether... Paul Robinson's been excellent or not. The current crop of England goalkeepers is pretty poor, I think, and they really need somebody good for the World Cup if they're to entertain any notions of winning it, and they don't appear to have anyone good. I'll take the poster's word for it if he says Robinson's been excellent.
Well, he was particularly outstanding in the penalties. Saving Ballack's penalty, no?
Well, Ballack, a German missing a penalty. has it ever happened before?
Now, but anyway, it was a big result for Blackburn, no?
It is, and you look at their squad, and they're a team that are probably going to finish somewhere between 13th and 17th this season. By all accounts, they deserved it, although some people are having to go at Ancelotti for making three substitutions, and then when Kalou got injured, they were down to 10 men. But yeah, no one gave them the fig, so hats off to them.
Mourinho always used to be praised for that, though, didn't he? When he'd make sweeping changes at halftime, they'd say, oh, he's so decisive. I mean, that is it's the risk you take, that you do leave yourself open to an injury. But Blackburn, though, they have been playing some nice stuff this season. People were saying that they might, because they'd slipped down the league, they might just go back to basics and stick Christopher Samba up front and whack it long to him. But they've been playing some really nice stuff. And David Dunn in good form.
Yeah. Modmore wonders to know if it's any coincidence that all this is happening while Big Sam is recovering in hospital from his heart bypass, and then he puts in brackets, or is it midfield bypass? It's not really nice, is it, poor chap? Getting better, but there you go. Well done to Blackburn Rovers, who will face Villa in the semi-finals, who beat Portsmouth, of course, while Man City get United, who beat Spurs. Now, there's been some talk about the fact that United's side were a bit of a reserve collection, and as such, possibly, this means that Besiktas are a better side than Spurs because they didn't get such a good result.
United could put out a squad of ball boys against Spurs at Old Trafford. Spurs always fold. They're like Everton. They always fold at Old Trafford. They shouldn't even play the match. Just give United 3 points.
What happened in the past is irrelevant, and that wouldn't affect what happened on Tuesday night.
No? Well, maybe it didn't affect it, but it's a recurring theme for some reason.
All right.
As is Chelsea winning at the main road or Eastern Stadium.
But you can always rely on certain teams to roll over at Old Trafford. Any team managed by Steve Bruce, apart from Sunderland this season, he said quickly, picking himself up on his own foolishness. Everton, Tottenham, they're hopeless at Old Trafford.
Now, West Ham will be the venue for Man United this weekend as they continue to chase Chelsea at the top. They don't have the best of records. Paul, I'm going to have to say it. They don't have the best of records at Upton Park United. They have lost two of the last three games that they've played there against the Hammers. It is significant.
But they're the only two games, I think I'm right in saying, they've lost in the Premier League era. There's that game, there have been more draws than anything else, I think.
Well, they're more relevant than any others because they're the most recent ones. I don't know, it's an interesting point, is it? Should we ever consider the precedence?
Well, any gambler worth his salt would certainly consider the precedence. And chances
are... If only we have one in the pod.
If something has happened quite often previously, there's a very, very good chance it will happen again.
Unless you're flipping coins and calling heads or tails, because if it's happened a lot in the past, that means it's unlikely to happen, progressively more unlikely in the future.
No, it isn't.
It's exactly the same chance.
Yeah. Every time you toss a coin, it's an even money shot.
That depends on how you're evaluating the statistical probabilities.
No, it doesn't.
It does.
Every time you toss a coin, the odds of it being heads or tails...
If I toss a coin 100 times, and the first 99 times it's come up heads...
You're right, that's a point mentioned by the author of The Black Swan.
By the author of The Black Swan, or some guy who was drinking at the back of The Black Swan.
What's The Black Swan, Sean?
It's a pub.
It's a book by Nassim Nicholas Taleb, which I'd urge you all to read, where he looks at sort of statistical probability, and I'm not really selling this very well, and also what people assume to be truisms, you know, they're actually not. And one of the things he discusses is probability. And he says, obviously, with the coin, it's a 50-50% chance.
Yeah.
However, if something happens 99 times out of 99 when you toss a coin, then you should assume that the coin is loaded or something.
Right, I could say, in all probability, this has been the worst part one we've done in a long time. So let's move back on then to the football.
What are the chances of part two being any better?
Well, 99 times out of 100, it's not. So anyway, now there you go. So West Ham taking on Man United. What chance do we give the plucky Hammers, who've had an interesting run of form of late, have they not?
But they have. The bookies make them 7-1 chance,
right?
With United 1-2 on, so or 2-1 on. So the bookies think it's United are going to win.
I predict goals because West Ham have been conceding a lot lately, and United should have been conceding a lot lately. Portsmouth, for example, last weekend could have had 6 or 7 against them because they constantly created shooting opportunities.
Well, there you go. It sounds like it's going to be an exciting matchup then, this West Ham-Man United affair. Ooh, Roger Palmer. So did anyone get closer than my utterly remarkable and completely against the form of prediction in Shawnee's We Wager? Sean Ingle, you challenged listeners to predict the results of 3 games last weekend. And ooh, Roger Palmer didn't quite get it, but boy, did he come close. Everton-Liverpool, he predicted 2-0, and thus it were. Arsenal-Chelsea 3-0. Likewise, Barcelona-Madrid he had as a 1-1, and that was the only thing he got slightly wrong. But you mentioned something of a prize, Sean Ingle.
Well, we said we'd read his name out, so well done, Roger Puff.
That's a prize. Having your name read out on this farce.
Okay, now...
There's a piece of paper on a clock here that has Say Hello written on it, which... I suspect that maybe from the books podcast or something, because
right.
There's a script line around.
That's true.
Maybe we could send that piece of paper with the message written on it to Ooh, Roger Palmer as well. And when I go for a cigarette after the pod, I'll keep the butt and put that in the envelope as well. I don't want him to go empty-handed with just a mention of his made-up name.
Right, then. Producer Pete has had enough, and he's pulling the plug on part one. Part two awaits with, excitingly enough, a live transatlantic... No, it's not really transatlantic, but transcontinental link-up with that man Owen Gibson, who, pluckily enough, has descended on South Africa to tell us all about the big FIFA... What would you call it? Beanfest? Whatever.
World Cup draw.
Yeah, World Cup draw, that's it, yeah. So, that's coming up after this.
Football Weekly from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.
Now, joining us on the line from South Africa's lovely Cape Town is Owen Gibson. Owen, good day
Hello
to
there,
you.
Hi.
How's everything looking out there?
Well, actually, rather surreally, I'm on Robben Island at the moment, Ooh. Where Nelson Mandela obviously spent his imprisonment there. They're holding a FIFA Executive Committee meeting here, so it's me and Sepp Blatter and about 200 international journalists on Robben Island, which is...
Why is Sepp Blatter holding it there? Is he trying to sort of bask in the reflected glory of
Robben Island?
Robben Island?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of an attempt to sort of talk about the legacy for South African football, the legacy for Africa, his grand mission to bring the World Cup to Africa for the first time,
right,
and so on. Whether he should be necessarily piggybacking on the back of years of suffering is quite an appropriate way to do it. Is another matter.
What's the buffet like, Owen?
Buffet is yet to be served, but
really?
I'm sure it will be spectacular.
Our advice is to get in early. Now, you're there, of course, for the big draw, which is coming up tomorrow.
That's all sorts
of controversy about the criteria for selecting the seeded teams, but they have been selected. What else has been happening? We hear that David Beckham's been saving the day for England's 2018 World Cup bid.
Well, that's right. You might remember that the 2018 bid received some criticism for some quarters for being lightweight, for not utilising our star names enough, and they've certainly tried to put that right this week, because it's been David Beckham here, there and everywhere, I suppose. You know, wherever he lands, the world's media's attention follows. And he's off today with my colleague Paul Haywood, touring a township, Khayelitsha, which is on the outskirts of Cape Town, visiting various UNICEF projects, visiting a Football for Hope Centre, which is FIFA's big sort of legacy mission. And the idea is that he talks about all the great things that an English World Cup could do for Africa, not unconnected to the fact that the four African Executive Committee member votes are going to be crucial when it comes to deciding the destination of the next World Cup.
Owen, just finally, what's your impression of the readiness? Obviously, the mobile phone network could do with some upgrading, but otherwise, is the infrastructure in place for football's biggest tournament?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think stadium-wise, I think they'll all get there. A couple of them are a little bit behind schedule, but the ones I've seen are looking spectacular. The Greenpoint Stadium in Cape Town here, and the new stadium in Durban is equally spectacular. But there could be questions about how they fill them after the World Cup, because it doesn't look like they're going to be able to persuade the big rugby teams to move in necessarily. So there's big questions about the legacy of the stadiums. And I think the other questions are going to be around things like logistics. So how people are going to get around the country, where are they going to sleep, and whether they're going to have, you know, kind of a bed for the night and a good experience when they get there. I think it's going to be challenging to say the least, and the advice to book early is well founded. And the other thing that's obvious is it's going to be incredibly expensive for anyone coming over here. I mean, it seems to me the prices have already started to be racked up, and I think it'll just get even more expensive as we get closer to June.
Oh, magnificent stuff, Owen. I look forward to seeing your claim for this little trip, and many thanks for joining us today. And look forward to seeing you soon.
No problem at all. Thanks, Owen.
Thanks, Owen. Owen Gibson in South Africa. Now, the other exciting bit of World Cup news, which Owen didn't get onto, but I can confirm, is that tea time at the Emirates Stadium in North London, Barry and myself and David Pleat, and I believe somebody else, is it Kevin McCarra?
Yes.
Will be forming a special live Football Weekly pod digest of the World Cup draw once the names are out of the pots and stuff, and we know who the group of death and life, etc., is. And that'll be available not only for the 50 lucky listeners who've won a spot to come and see us do it, but it'll also be up on our website as a video experience. Isn't that right, Sean Ingle, on Saturday afternoon?
Absolutely, and we also have live coverage Of the draw itself, right, and interactive guides.
Fantastic.
And everything else you want to read.
Right.
If there's only going to be 50 people at it, it's going to be very empty at the Emirates, isn't it?
Well, I don't know if we're doing it actually on the pitch.
All right.
I suspect that we might be in the Diamond Suite.
Barry, you're used to playing gigs of around 50 people, aren't you? You'll be comfortable.
There you go. Me, Barry, David Pleat, and Kevin Friday afternoon. Meantime...
By the way, sorry, I also understand that the 50 lucky listeners,
yes,
as you erroneously described them, they're slightly lucky in that they're going to be getting tanked up on 2.5 hours worth of free booze before we record the podcast.
So is that so?
Probably not. Wouldn't be a good idea to have it live.
No, all right.
It could get ugly.
Well worth checking out the video highlights then. Now, also from South Africa this week, there's been one or two exclamations, can I say that, by that man Sepp Blatter on the subject of Thierry Henry, who is now going to be subject to a disciplinary committee inquiry. It's not a question, says Sepp Blatter, of this player or another, to anybody who's worried that somehow Thierry Henry might be made a scapegoat or that. He says, it was blatant unfair playing and was shown all around the world, but I don't know what the outcome will be. Sounds like it's very much in the balance, that one.
This blatant unfair play didn't prevent him from ringing him up personally to express his sympathy to him after the match.
Who, Sepp Blatter?
Yeah.
He rang Thierry Henry.
He said he rang Thierry Henry.
Did he?
And then when he was slammed for saying that, he said, actually, I'm going to launch an inquiry. Well, ultimately, though, I think this whole video technology thing will be, it'll be settled by lawyers. At some point, somebody's going to put in a big claim saying we missed out because of this wrong decision, and they'll sue a player or a team for loads of money, and then FIFA will go, oh, we better do something.
Crikey. Well, let me finish off part two with one of my favourite bits of the pod. A quick nod to what's coming up this weekend, and I mean quick, Barry, it's all right. Just because there are two huge matches. One is the so-called Derby of Italy, which is Juventus Inter. Now, Juve are 8 points behind Inter, so this is a whopping match in Turin. That's Saturday night, and a big game, as I say. Roma are taking on Lazio, though, on Sunday night, and there could be big trouble in store for Lazio. They're only 1 point off the relegation zone. They're in absolutely shocking form. They've only scored 9 goals all season. They haven't won in 11 matches. Last night in the Europa League, they were so desperate they stuck in a full-strength side to take on Salzburg, and they still lost 2-1. And their last result in the league, meanwhile, was a 0-0 with Bologna. Basically, the fans are getting very, very restless. And as we all know, Lazio fans plus restlessness is not a happy combination. Should they lose in the derby, I predict, in the words of the song, a riot.
It's a great shame, though, because the early part of this decade, you had Lazio win the league, had Roma win the league. The Rome derby was a real spectacle. It mattered.
It still matters.
To Rome, but to Europe, and both sides of...
Well, it was all that built on borrowed money and collapse of financial empire, etc., 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 which has hit both clubs. And Lotito, the guy who rescued Lazio from their enormous tax debts and etc., etc., with a lot of help from Lazio fans and a very forgiving state who gave him a kind of 25 years to pay off his tax debts and stuff. He has done a remarkable job in getting them, saving them from bankruptcy, but doesn't seem to be able to take them on to the next step.
Has Mourinho said anything about to all those critics, people like Lippi, who claimed that Juve would be the team to win the Serie A this season?
Well, he probably has. He says something to everyone the whole time. So anyway, Lazio. So there you go. Roma Lazio coming up Sunday night. That, though, is it for part two. Coming up in part three, we've got Sid Lowe, your post, and the remainder of our Premier League weekend preview. Woof.
Football Weekly from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.
Let's start with posts. Here's Bric-a-Brac. Jesus H. Christ, that was a boring podcast. He goes on to say, Ireland are idiots for asking FIFA to let them play in the 2010 World Cup finals. They should have asked FIFA to let them play in the 2010 World Cup final. That would have shown ambition and sent a message to people like Sepp Blatter and Jack Warner and João Havelange. Fair point there. Chuck Schick, much as I admire the work Ancelotti's doing at Chelsea, and as nice a chap as he is, he is leagues ahead of Jimbo in naff musical taste. Not only does he like Elton John, one of his first trips in London was to see Mamma Mia, and he also likes the group who ruined the climax to every sporting event since the mid-70s, Queen. Hateful, hateful Queen, says Chuck Schick, who then puts in brackets, Flash Gordon notwithstanding. So it's okay to hate Queen, but you can like Flash Gordon.
Flash Gordon's got to be one of their worst songs.
I mean, I don't know.
Doyle is more of a rocker than I am, but certainly early Queen. Yeah.
How can you not like Flash Gordon with those great little sound bites from the film? Flash, I love you, but we've only got 24 hours to save the world.
14.
14, is it?
14 hours.
Right, okay. Flash Gordon approaching.
No, it is great. It's probably the campest film I've ever made. I enjoy it.
Fantastic.
Although when I saw it, I remember seeing it as a kid, I didn't realise just how incredibly gay it was.
Right.
Because I probably, at that age, wouldn't even have been aware of
gayness. Despite your background in an Irish preschool.
Yeah.
Curious. The Elton John interlude in Monday's pod brought plenty of positive response. Hagen 88 says, do you take requests? How about Elton John's Song for Guy? It's an instrumental number, that one. Not Singing Anymore comes up with the top 10 of Elton John's songs. I won't read the whole lot out, but he does manage to say he dedicates them all to, you know, prominent football people. Sorry seems to be the hardest word. That one's for Alex Ferguson. Someone Saved My Life Tonight, Phil Brown. I'm Still Standing, Didier Drogba.
Sorry, when did we turn into fighting talk?
Oh, is this a kind of fighting talk?
Yeah, all we need for you is to laugh incessantly at your own jokes and we'll be a replica.
All right. Madman Across the Water, Raymond Domenech. Your sister can't twist, but she can rock and roll, Zinedine Zidane. It's funny, you know, we had something like 400 posts this week and yet those were the ones I chose to read out. Something's not right, really, is it?
Well, it would be unfair to read out all the ones about Sean.
Sean Ingle, the 390.
That's all that was left.
Well, and there was also you discussing your trip to the cinema to see Paranormal Activity, Barry.
Yes. I was so scared when I got home that I and alone that I felt the need to sit up conversing with the people who post under our podcast blog.
Was Mrs. Baz not part of the cinema expedition?
No, Mrs. Baz wouldn't go to a film like that. She'd have the arm off me, actually, because she sort of sits, clutches my arm. And we could be watching, like, a cartoon and she'll jump and yank my arm. So it would have come off at the shoulder if she'd been at Paranormal Activity. She's not a big fan of scary movies. But
it's a genuinely spooky film then. The hype is justified, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'd quite like to go back and watch it again now, but sit with my back to the screen so I could just watch the audience watching the film. Mm. It's not brilliant, but it's very, very good and vastly superior, I think, to The Blair Witch Project, which many people have likened it to.
Right. Okay, well, that's interesting. Paranormal Activity.
Yeah, I'd recommend it, all right.
Well, there you go. Now, let's catch up with the latest from the Liga with Dr. Sid in Spain.
Hello.
How are you, Sid?
I'm very well, thank you.
Where are you, in your kitchen?
No, I'm just trying to... I was actually just walking up the stairs with a big pile of newspapers in my hand.
Crikey. What do they say on their front pages, Sid?
Well, I'm quite glad you asked that, because I think this is hilariously funny. Well, I think it's funny. Maybe I'm easily pleased. In fact, you know I'm easily pleased. But anyway, the front cover of Marca, really quite a big story. And there's been an investigation carried out by ESSA, which, of course, is the I was going to call it a company. It's not really a company, is it? The institution that investigates things like fraudulent bets online and so on. And a series of Spanish players have been involved. So the front cover of Marca is 300 players investigated in total between the First Division, the Second Division, and the Second Division B, which obviously is a really, really big story. The other really big story going on at the moment is Atletico Madrid. Yes, they gave a press conference, which was essentially a way of trying to pretend that everything was under control, and they admitted 200 euros worth of debt and 27
200 million euros.
Sorry, that's what I meant. Yeah. 200 euros wouldn't be too much, would it? 200 million euros worth of debt and 27 million euros lost every single year. So those two huge stories.
Yeah.
And the front cover of Ash, when those two big stories are going on, is fantastic. It's a very familiar now picture of Cristiano Ronaldo in his red swimming shorts during the summer. And it says, Cristiano Ronaldo, Superman. Every day he does 3,000 sit-ups. Big story.
Tell you what, that is a lot of sit-ups, though, isn't it?
That's a hell of a lot of sit-ups. I don't know if he's got time for that. I couldn't do that many in 24 hours.
It's a lot of sit-ups.
He does look enormous. He does look extremely well-built.
He looks enormous in his swimming shorts. I should just point out, for listeners who are not familiar with the Spanish press, that Sid talking about a paper that he's bought called Ass with pictures of men in swimsuits is actually not what it might sound like.
No, the other one that has men in swimming shorts and stuff like that in Spain is called Zero. As I'm sure you know, Jimbo.
Do I? Twirls moustache. Now, what's this business then of the 300 players under investigation? That sounds a bit rum, hey?
Yeah, it could be very big indeed. And of course, it's something that has caused a real stir in Spain. Essentially, what this is a continuation of an investigation carried out by ESA and Interpol, apparently, are involved. Certainly, that's what Sepp Blatter said. And according to what papers in Spain, Marca, there may be as many as 300 players involved. Now, I'm not going to name any of the players, partly because the Spanish Football Federation yesterday didn't name any players, didn't name any clubs, and refused to do so. They'll pass this over to the state public prosecutor today, so there won't be any formal response until tomorrow. But oddly, one of the clubs who was potentially involved named some of the players on their website, which is a slightly bizarre way to go about it. As you can imagine, the other clubs involved are not very happy that one or two of their players have suddenly turned up in the public eye because of one of the clubs. At the moment, there's nothing concrete, nothing to know for sure, except that the accusation is these players are being investigated, not necessarily that as yet they've done anything. The players themselves, as you can probably imagine, have mostly come out and said they've got nothing to do with this at all.
Brilliant, Sid. Our legal team are waving cigars at you and giving big thumbs up all round. So you've just safely negotiated that minefield. Tell us then about that other story you mentioned, Atletico Madrid, only about the 200 million euros in debt, and yet... they feel able to turn down a big bucks offer from Chelsea for Hakun Aguero.
Yeah, because what they're saying, and there was a press conference yesterday with Enrique Cerezo, who's the president, and Miguel Ángel Gil Marín, who's the essentially the chief executive, on a salary of 900,000 euros a year, plus a 300,000 euro a year bonus, even though he's also the majority shareholder of the club, so any benefits the club would have, he would make as well. Although, of course, they don't make any, and this is kind of the point. They're running a loss of 27 million euros a year. They've admitted, basically because they were forced to, because in what it must be said was a very good piece of journalism from Marca recently, they actually had a copy of the club accounts, and they've admitted that the overall debt is around about 200 million euros. But they say it's not a problem because it's only a debt in the way that someone who owns a house and has a mortgage is in debt. It's a servicing debt, they claim, not least because when they sell the Calderon, they will make back that much money. Now, unfortunately, there's a slight word of warning here. This is, to some extent, what Valencia thought with Mestalla. And, of course, they were unable to sell Mestalla and the whole thing fell apart. Now, Atletico do have a plan in place for the sale of the current stadium because it's alongside the M30, which is the equivalent of the North Circular Road. So the council is behind it as well. And they're saying that means it's absolutely fine to be able to turn down a bid for Kun Aguero. They say they've had a second bid and they're not having him go anywhere because they say they are a growing club, they are growing with Kun, and Kun is growing with them. The truth is, however, of course, in purely footballing terms, that Kun Aguero long since outgrew Atletico Madrid, just as Fernando Torres once did.
Mm. Now, let's conclude then by talking about the Ballon d'Or, Sid. Mm. A whopping win there for little Leo Messi. A 240-point margin. He won, 96 voters gave Messi 473 points out of a possible 480, near unanimous. Not too many arguments, I guess, with him as your choice of European Player of the Year. But how about the fact that Barcelona had four of the top five? Has a club ever dominated the voting quite so much?
Well, I think this whole Ballon d'Or has thrown up, I think, situations that have never been repeated before. I think, as you say, Leo Messi's never, there's never been a player have more votes than Messi, never been as big a difference between first and second place. I personally think that when you go back through it, it's very, very hard to find a player who's been as clear a candidate as Leo Messi. And I really don't think there's any argument whatsoever with him winning it. They won absolutely everything, Barcelona. He scored in the final of the Champions League. He scored in the final of the Copa del Rey. He scored twice in the game that effectively won them the league, the 6-2 thrashing of Real Madrid. He, of course, provided the assist to win an Olympic gold medal for Argentina as well at the Olympics. So I just don't think there's an argument with him. I was looking back at this the other day. The only player I can think of that's been as individually outstanding in one year before as him, possibly Michel Platini in 1984, because bear in mind that Maradona didn't count for the European Ballon d'Or back in 1986. So I think there's no real argument. The Barcelona as well is stunning, and I think that maybe you would argue, and some people have, that Xavi Hernandez in particular could possibly challenge Leo Messi for it this year, because of course everything that Messi's won, and plus he won the European Championships as the key player. The trouble is that's 2008, not 2009. Hmm. And when you look at the disastrous state of Argentina this year under Diego Maradona, it's tempting to say, well, there's a number of differences. Obviously, one is Diego Maradona's your coach rather than Pep Guardiola, which I think is a colossal difference. But also, I think it is tempting to just point a finger and say, actually, you know what? Maybe Xavi Hernandez is a real key. This guy, when he retires, I think, Xavi, people will look back and say, he didn't just play in the heart of the midfield of the best Barcelona team in history, the best Spanish national team in history, but he imposed a style on both of those teams. So possibly there could be an argument for Xavi Hernandez, but I don't think there's ever been a player with a case as utterly uncontestable as Leo Messi's this time around.
Caramba.
Sid, do you know whether Karim Benzema has got the hump because he got no votes at all?
Well, he's certainly got the hump right now. He crashed his car into a tree on the way back from the Clásico. Presumably, it was a bit like the Ashley Cole case. 6,000, you're joking!
It wasn't
into a tree, Karim Benzema
morning,
went, no points, straight into a tree. You must be. He's not very happy, Benzema, right now. He is also more than just not happy. He concerns Real Madrid because they're worried that he's not really integrating particularly well, that he's not showing particularly good demeanour. He's been stroppy about the fact that he's been substituted rather a lot, even though, in truth, he hasn't done a huge amount to warrant a place in the starting 11. And, dare I say, the two words that terrify Real Madrid more than anything else, there's a little bit of concern that he might be turning into the new Nicolas Anelka.
How about him moving in January to Arsenal, for example, then?
Nicolas Anelka or
no, Benzema.
I think there's absolutely no chance of Real Madrid allowing that to happen for the simple reason they spent €35 million on him, rising to 42. There's far too much pride. And I think, then of course there's the other footballing decisions. I just think it's too early for that to happen. The only way I could see it happening would be at the end of the season and if Benzema pushes to go, which right now is just not going to be the case.
No. Sid, thank you so much for that comprehensive roundup of the situation there in Spain. We look forward to hearing your thoughts on Monday.
Fantastic. Speak to you then.
Have a lovely weekend.
I will try. You too. Cheers.
Well, it just remains for us then to have a quick look through the remaining fixtures that await us this weekend in the Premier League. You have your Arsenal against Stoke. You mentioned that before, Sean. Big game for Arsenal, no?
It is, although I think this weekend it's the matches at the bottom are more interesting. You've got Portsmouth against Burnley, you've got Wigan, Birmingham, and you've also got Wolves v Bolton.
Right.
I think certainly with Wolves and with Portsmouth, those both got difficult games coming up. They really have to win this weekend.
Portsmouth-Burnley is kind of interesting. Portsmouth lost 5 out of 6 at home. Burnley have lost 5 out of 6 away. Portsmouth have conceded an average of 2 goals in each of their home games, and Burnley have conceded 3.2 goals away from home.
Really?
So I'm predicting a high-scoring humdinger between those two teams.
What about the resurgent Blackburn Rovers against the, in inverted commas, resurgent Liverpool?
I sort of put both of those in inverted commas.
But no, we talked about records earlier, but yeah. Blackburn have only won one of the last 10 against Liverpool at Ewood. Often what happens after a team has a big result in the cup, they then slip a bit in the next game in the league.
Right. Tough fixture, though, for Liverpool, though.
It is, but Liverpool have got a good recent record and they'd expect to win that.
Right. Hagen 88 suggests Alberto Aquilani is a modern football version of Bernie from Weekend at Bernie's, the dead man who's kind of paraded around his head. Might be live. I imagine that'll be too tough a fixture for him to be risked in, will it?
Probably.
Yeah. Okay. And meanwhile, Everton are hosting Spurs. Love that quote from Tim Cahill saying that we can't hit a barn door at the moment. Way to go to whip up morale. Although, of course, they did find the net against AEK Athens in the Europa League, which was nice to get that result. Although they did extend their enormously long already injury list at the same time.
They did, and they've also got a terrible record against Spurs at Goodison.
Do they?
A terrible record. They've only won.
How bad, Sean? How bad?
I think they've won 2 matches since 1993. I think Spurs usually go there and either win or draw.
Really? All right then. And of course,
I wouldn't read too much into their win against AEK Athens either, because AEK Athens are, as I'm sure you know, James, are in complete disarray at the moment.
Right.
Players haven't been paid for a couple of months or 3 months or something like that.
What about Hull, unbeaten in 4, visiting Aston Villa?
Well, the bookies certainly have Villa's huge favourites.
Do they?
And you'd expect them to, yeah.
I fancy a plucky Hull in that game.
They're
13-2,
if you...
Normally when Jimbo rolls out a tip like this... No, I think you've had a couple.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay,
so I'm going to put a big ring around Hull here.
Good
anyway.
Good for me. I think a draw, probably. Well, there you go. That is it for today's Football Weekly Very Extra. Well done for making it through. And thanks to Sean Ingle.
Cheers, James.
To Barry Glendening.
Cheers.
And to Paul Doyle. And especially to producer Pete, who has cut and snipped it and generally got it into a broadcastable shape. And we'll be back on Monday. Look forward to speaking to you then.
Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.